Broadcasting from the studios of Business Radio X, it's time for Litigators Lounge. This show is brought to you by Hall Booth Smith, guiding clients through challenging workplace legal issues. Now, here are your hosts.
Okay, good day to everyone out there. We are convening a bonus episode of the Litigators Lounge today because a lot has happened this week, and Shiley Bannon and myself have decided that a drink is in order, and a bonus episode of Litigators Lounge is definitely called for to talk about all things non-competes and craziness that are coming out of the FTC this week. How are you doing today, Shiley?
I'm good. I was minding my own business, getting ready for Passover when the FTC drops this bombshell on us on April 23rd. And I immediately grabbed my bottle of Manischewitz and said, it's time to call Jackie and figure out what's going on.
You wouldn't be the only one to call me. My phone started erupting with text messages and emails and calls and saying, my non-compete's not valid anymore. I'm free. I win my lawsuit. And I was like, hold on. Let's regroup. Let's breathe. That is not what this means. You're still obligated. You still signed. And unpacking what actually happened, what the FTC actually said, whether there's any teeth to it, whether it'll stick. Whether the Supreme, ultimately, let's start from the beginning. I'm getting a little ahead of it.
Yes, let's start from the beginning. What happened on April 23rd of 2024 and who did it?
Oh, you're talking about the FTC, right? You're not talking about all the other horrible things that happened that day.
Oh, that's another topic that I know we're planning to ask about on another day. But specifically in our story today, potentially the villain is the Federal Trade Commission, right?
They are. Okay. So this isn't actually new in the sense that they proposed a rule banning non-competes a while ago. And this is something that President Joe Biden has actually campaigned on, particularly recently, given that we're in an election year. And he's made it a point to highlight in his campaign that he wants to invalidate non-compete agreements. What's a non-compete? And if our listeners out there know, a non-compete is basically a clause or a provision in an employment agreement which says that an employee can't subsequently, upon leaving their job, go and work for a direct competitor or establish their own competitive enterprise or establish or have an ownership interest in a competing entity. And this is done primarily to ensure protection for the previous employer, for their trade secrets, their proprietary information, the confidential information, and just basically get an investment on their return for the amount of money, time, resources that they've spent in building this employment relationship.
And developing that employee in a lot of cases.
And developing the employee. And there are people out there who do argue that say this is an unfair restraint on competition. This unfairly hampers free enterprise. And that's a consideration that has always been put forward. This is not a new or novel argument. Courts have addressed this time and time again. Employers do have a legitimate business interest in protecting their information, in protecting their investments, in protecting their trade secrets. And one of the, if not the most effective way of furthering that goal is with a non-compete. The provisions still have to be reasonable. Courts still have the authority to redline them or invalidate them if they're grossly overbroad. You can't tell somebody you can never have a job for the rest of your life anywhere in the world that's competitive to us. Courts are well poised to deal with this.
And this is something that's typically handled on a state by state and even inside of the state, geographic region by court region specific manner, right? Some courts are a little more restrictive. Some states are more restrictive on what can be included in a non-compete, but it's been handled locally rather than nationally by a federal entity or law, correct?
Since the dawn of time, since the beginning, this has always been a state level issue. If a state wants to ban non-competes, just like California has, they have every right to do that. And nobody is saying that states can't do that, right? It's long been the law in California. You can't have non-solicits. You can't have non-competes. What happened was the FTC came along and said, here's 520 pages of our best work. Read it. But let me tell you what it says. It says, we're going to ban all non-competes. All non-competes for all workers on all levels, and not just ban them going forward, we're going to invalidate millions of non-competes in existence.
That are already in existence.
That are already in existence, with very limited exceptions.
Okay. So some people might be scratching their heads, because I certainly was when this came across my phone as I was hands and elbow deep in Haroset. What does the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, what does it have to do with employers? Usually we're talking on a federal level about the EEOC or the Department of Labor. I don't hear very much about the FTC when we are talking about employer and employee relationships.
That's a valid and important observation, Shiley, and not one that you should be making, considering that they don't typically wade into the employment waters. The FTC is a federal consumer protection agency. They're meant to prevent unfair methods of competition and address unfair and deceptive trade practices.
Antitrust, so to speak.
Antitrust. That's that was up and until this, the last rule they actually promulgated was 50 years ago, or however many years ago, it was 50 or 60 now, about antitrust. The FTC doesn't typically do a lot of rulemaking.
Right. They're usually busy focusing on airlines trying to merge, or Verizon and Sprint and their internecine wars.
Yeah, they got busy when AT&T wanted to do their merger, and their when you're thinking about like the conglomerates and the monster corporations, that's when the FTC gets involved. You don't much hear about them, about some mom and pop or local franchise company selling sandwiches, trying to protect their special sauce. And then along comes the FTC and tells them, you don't have to, you can't do that.
Unless, of course, for example, Pepsi were to send a spy into Coca-Cola to get their recipe, then maybe the FTC might get involved.
I would tell you that even then they should stay out of it, that Pepsi and Coke have sufficient remedies on state law bases and even federal bases. They've got the federal trade secret laws, they've got laws abound that they can seek redress from. I personally think that there's no room at the bar. There's no seats left in the lounge for the FTC.
And it sounds like you're not the only one who thinks that, because on April 24th, there were lawsuits that were filed, right?
Not one day later. And hats off to Sullivan Cromwell for being ready with this.
Those heroic lawyers who we know were up all night drafting that lawsuit.
They were ready. This has been, since the proposed rule was put out there, you could tell it's very well written. And
right. And we'll talk about what the next steps are and what this lawsuit looks like. But let's talk about, so the FTC wades into employer-employee relations and decides to issue this very sweeping final rule prohibiting non-competes in pretty much every single manner, with a couple of small exceptions, right?
Yeah, but even those exceptions are not what you think that they would be. So let's talk first about future non-competes, right?
Okay.
Once the rule becomes effective, which would be 120 days from the date that the rule is published in the Federal Register. So in theory, that could be August of this year. It won't be, since there's already litigation, but in theory, it could. You never know. Something crazy could happen.
August 22nd by my date calculator.
August 22nd of this year. Worst case scenario.
Okay.
And for future non-competes, if that rule becomes effective, that means employers are broadly prohibited from entering or even attempting to enter non-competes, or enforcing non-competes, or even representing to any employee on any level in any industry that they'll be subject to the non-compete provisions.
And they also have to send notice and say, all of those agreements that you guys signed, they're not worth the paper they were printed on.
That's for current and existing non-competes. Okay. I'm talking about just future. So okay, there's no carve-outs for any particular. So for senior executives, for example, and high-level C-suite policy-making employees, under the current non-competes, if you have non-competes with current C-suite level employees who have positions of power and are able to make decisions on behalf of the organization, that's not just to say that somebody has a title. That's not enough. they have to be a senior executive in the true sense. They have to be able to have the power and authority to make decisions. Who would that be? Obviously, the presidents, the CEOs.
What if their current contracts have like options to extend for certain periods of time? So if they renew a contract and they extend, or they exercise that extension on a contract, would that still constitute the existing non-compete agreement, or would that new term period be considered a new employment agreement that would not be allowed to have the non-compete provision included?
If this goes into effect, your previous agreement, it doesn't, whether it's past or future, it's null and void. It doesn't exist anymore. So it won't matter.
With the senior executives?
No, senior executives are carved out.
So that's what I'm talking about. If you have a senior executive who has a non-compete provision in their contract, but the contract also has an option to extend or an option to renew for a certain period of time, a finite period of time written into that contract, then would that non-compete provision still apply for an extension period that is already written into the original contract, do you think?
I'll tell you, sometimes talking to you is like taking law school, the bar exam, all over again, and you bring back these horrible waves of terror. Which is not to say I don't like talking to you. I do. You're a treasure and a gem, and I hope you never change. But I would tell you, let's map it out, right? So what's the date of the contract? If we're saying that a senior executive currently is subject to a non-compete, and he is or she is in fact, or they are in fact, within the definition of senior executive, I would tell you, strict interpretation of the rule that their past non-compete is enforceable. Future non-competes based on things that have not yet happened might not be. I don't know. That's a great question. And I can't presume to know how it would be interpreted. I can only tell you, I would argue that they should be free after that. But if you're not extending, practically speaking, if you're exercising your right to renew, I don't know. I don't know.
I just wanted to throw in a hypothetical to show how ambiguous this is. But for future agreements that would be written, it would not be allowed to be included. Now,
senior executives and all.
Yeah. So they're the grand poobah of everything. No non-compete.
No non-competes. Let the competition begin. And like you hear like gongs going, like total free for all. Everyone's going at it.
So when they were originally looking at enacting this rule, there were some discussions about carving out non-competes and allowing them for healthcare workers, correct?
I don't know that I would use the word discussions, but there were definitely comments received from the healthcare industry for sure, because the argument in support of non-competes for healthcare is that they're needed to maintain quality of care, to maintain service levels that have been provided in the healthcare industry. And the FTC said, you know, we don't care, basically. They said, we don't believe that the benefits outweigh the negatives when it comes to the healthcare industry or any other industry, really, for that matter. So the comments coming from healthcare organizations and industry trade associations considered and disregarded, essentially. Healthcare is still within the purview of this rule banning non-competes. So it's not an industry-specific rule. You'd have to really look to see if the rule applies to you. You need to go back and see if you'd fall within one of the three exceptions. And there's only three in the rule. We covered one of them already, the senior executive exception. And I think that I should also point out that it's not just that you are a policymaker, like the president, the CEO, things like that, C-suite level, but also there's a minimum salary threshold that you have to make. And that's $151,164 annually. So that's the senior executive exception. There's also very limited other exceptions from the rule, which is for a bona fide sale of a business. And there's also an exception for causes of action related to non-compete clauses that accrued prior to the effective date of the rule. So in this regard, I have a lot of upset clients who call me and say, oh, we win the lawsuit. And then I have to tell them, not really, this was filed 2 years ago, which puts it within the exception under 910.3B.
Those are tough phone calls to take and to break news to, isn't it?
I would love to be able to write that letter to the judge and say, the FTC says these are non-enforceable. Everybody go home, save ourselves a lot of time and headache. But I don't think we're there yet. And we may never be.
So As we mentioned earlier, April 24th, Sullivan and Cromwell, on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, filed a suit against the FTC to block this, the enactment of this rule, correct?
They did. Yeah, you could tell that they had this one in the pipeline, and good on them. Hats off to you, Sullivan Cromwell.
And the basis really is that the Federal Trade Commission has overstepped its authority, right?
Yeah. They're saying that they went too far, that this is not, there's no room for the FTC in the litigator's lounge. There's no chairs for you. Get out.
You can't sit with us.
You can't sit with us. Exactly. No new friends.
So if that litigation is still going, and I'm sure that the courts will address it expeditiously, the federal courts seem to be pretty good at that. But if that litigation is still going, let's say in 120 days, what happens? Does this rule go into effect regardless? Is it, is there a temporary injunction against them enforcing it? How, when does this take effect potentially?
So we could very quickly get an injunction ruling, either in this case, this isn't the only lawsuit that's been filed in Texas. Texas is the venue of choice for this.
I can only imagine why.
Right, exactly. When the vaccine issue was all the rage, it was in Texas, and it was the Fifth Circuit that made the rulings.
And the FLSA exemption changes back in 2016, I think that also was in Texas that it was enjoined.
We might need to pack up our shot glasses and get over to Texas. Things are really cooking down there. And I don't mean just the barbecue.
Listen, I've been listening to Cowboy Carter nonstop for several weeks. I have my cowboy boots ready. You say the word, I will meet you.
We're going to have to open up an HBS Dallas. Austin, Dallas. Okay. You say potato, I say Dallas. So I think that we could have a injunctive ruling pretty soon. And whether it's out from the Chamber of Commerce case, whether it's, there's another claim filed by Ryan LLC in Texas. So I feel pretty confident that we're going to get a decision in the next couple of weeks. So either this will be stayed, and if not in this lawsuit, another one to come. But regardless of the outcome, even if it's stayed, even if it's allowed to go forward, this is going to wind its way up to the Supreme Court. So we are going to have to sit back and watch.
I think that we should have some popcorn and cocktails ready to go.
I know you do. You love a Supreme Court moment.
Oh, I'm going to be
Shaking. I'm looking at you. It's just like your eyes are bulging. You look like a crazy person.
It might be. The radio. No, I just think that Justice McDreamy is going to have a lot of thoughts about this.
I think a lot of people have a lot of thoughts about this, but I want to point out one thing, which is, again, because I'm a dream killer and a joy stealer, and that is, even if this was enforceable, even if this rule goes into effect, and I'm not sure that it will anytime soon or ever, call me optimistic, I don't know, but there's no private cause of action with this rule. So anybody thinking that they're going to sue their employer to get out of their non-compete and get back pay or wages or lost wages or any kind of compensation for these non-competes, unfortunately, guess again, because there's, again, only the FTC can pursue remedies in accordance with this law. And even then, the FTC can't get any civil penalties or monetary relief either for violating this rule.
Can they get injunctive relief?
They can, but first what they have to do is pursue an adjudication, which is an administrative complaint filed against the organization. It's then overseen by an administrative law judge. That ALJ could issue an injunction. And if and only if that employer violates the injunction, then the FTC can get civil penalties in court if the party's ordered to cease and desist from violating that injunction.
So in some hypothetical world, going back to my law school exam land, conceivably, people could start making all of these complaints to the FTC, and then the FTC creates sort of an enforcement branch potentially similar to the EEOC. If they get their dream, if they get their fantasy, do they get to do all of this?
I don't know. We'll find out once Texas weighs in. I don't know that they have really thought this through. Sometimes you just act and then figure it out later. I don't know that they have a dedicated branch for enforcement. Certainly the FTC does have the staff that's needed to do whatever they need to do when it comes to adjudications. When it comes to enforcement of this particular rule, maybe they bit off more than they could chew, but we'll see. It's a broad sweeping rule, I will tell you. But I don't think, if I could give everybody out there, employers specifically, a piece of advice, it's, yeah, this is a significant departure from existing law and that it makes all technically illegal. But I do think that it's still premature for either employees to rejoice or employers to go into like cold sweats and panic. I think there's too much uncertainty about this.
And that's very reassuring. And I think that is what our listeners need to hear. Listeners on both sides, the employers and the employees.
Right.
In the words of our Texas friends, hold on to your horses.
Just have a drink, take a seat at the bar, and just relax right now. There's too much uncertainty about this. But it does have that kind of like earth-shattering, newsworthy headline for you. Your non-compete's invalidated. Go start an competition immediately.
All right. Thank you all for joining us in Litigators Lounge for this brief update on non-competes and the FTC's rule. Jackie, you, of course, have been very helpful and informative to our listeners. If anybody has a question about this, or please send us an email at litigatorslounge@hallboothsmith.com. And in our show notes, we will also add links to a really helpful bulletin that Jackie has authored with some of our other partners. We will have a link to the final rule itself, the language, if you're inclined to read it, and also a link to the lawsuit that was filed that we discussed in this show.
And just to be clear, if and when this rule does become effective and the notice requirements and the notice provisions do become law, we absolutely will let people know. You will be the first to know. We'll give you the language. We'll give you the exact notifications that you need to put out there right now.
Oh, yes. We will all be very busy redrafting handbooks and employment agreements.
But I'm not doing that this week. I'm waiting.
All right. Thank you very much. And we will be back with our regularly scheduled programming on our regular schedule.
All right. Thanks, Shiley.
Bye, Jackie.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Litigators Lounge. This show is brought to you by Hall Booth Smith, helping clients navigate the complexities of workplace legal issues. For more information, go to hallboothsmith.com.
Litigators Lounge is a production brought to you by Hall Booth Smith. This podcast is published for the purposes of providing general information and education on topics which include those related to the law and legal issues. But the contents of this podcast do not constitute legal advice. Listening to this podcast or utilizing the information contained in it in any way does not constitute, nor does it create, an attorney-client relationship between you and Hall Booth Smith or its lawyers. The contents of this podcast should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice from a professional attorney licensed in your jurisdiction.